Live and Lansing, Jack Ebling is on More Compelling Talk Radio, 1320 WILS.
Welcome back, Jack and Scott, Ebling and you, 1320 WILS. Very happy to welcome in our first guest, author, speaker, and advocate for peace around the world, Frank Swift. Hello, Frank. How are you?
Hello, Jack. Fine. Thank you.
Well, we talk about war, and it seems so often there are no winners. What are the rationales that prevail that mean that war is justified?
Well, Jack, if we gained anything at all from the horrible, unnecessary destruction of that beautiful country that wasn't really any threat to us, and the terrible trauma and death of the Iraqi people and our troops, I think it's the awareness now of an increasing number of us that, as General Dwight Eisenhower put it many years ago, that war is only as one who's seen its brutality, its futility, and its stupidity.
Is it ever warranted?
No, because there are never any winners in war.
And why do we keep having them?
Well, I think that paradigm is beginning to change. I hope very much so, because as we become more aware of this, whether we were combat veterans or not, we're beginning to see that war is a terrible waste of resources, a terrible waste of lives. It causes nothing but misery, and we have a better choice. Because peace, on the other hand, is the what I call the climate of creative cooperation between people that flourishes where everyone are winners. Because even in an economic sense, as well as a moral sense or any other sense, because we aren't wasting our thoughts, our genius, our resources on killing each other, and instead we're investing them in productively.
All right, I'm going to say that there are probably a lot of people involved with the military-industrial complex who benefit from war, but for most people, I think it's safe to say that there are some real economic hardships caused as a result of that, and if that is true, we also have potentially catastrophic loss of life, incredible inconvenience, separation. If all of those things are true, why do we look around the world and we still see so much conflict?
Well, I think the people that you mentioned, the war profiteers, for example, perpetuate this kind of thing because they don't look beyond the immediate huge profits that they get from it into the future, where even themselves, their families, friends, and all the rest of us are suffering the consequences eventually.
All right, we could be cynics here, and in many ways we probably are, and think that there is a great deal of influence with elected officials to support war efforts. But let's give them benefit of the doubt for a minute, and let's say that they are well-meaning individuals who are trying to look out for their country, and they see that their national interests are at stake. Are you still saying that there's no time that the United States or any other country should try to defend itself militarily?
Yes, in the sense of especially a preemptive war, because that's the assumption that we have potential enemies rather than potential friends. And if we can change our thinking to look at the world as being habitated by potential friends who can work together in solving some of our huge problems like the...
Well, you heard Mahmoud Ahmadinejad at the United Nations. How can you look at him as a potential friend?
Oh, well, he's not all bad. I realize that he says a lot of crazy things, but if we were willing to sit down and talk to people like him rather than pose threats, then we might get somewhere. And I think that's true, even in just personal relationships, you know. Our personal relationships with friends and others are very much the same as relationships with other nations.
Well, he said the United States was complicit in 9/11. Do you believe that?
Well, I'm not so sure of that. But the certainly offering threats along with carrots hasn't helped our cause in befriending people. You know?
All right, let's talk about the long-term consequences of something like the Iraq War. We all can count. We know what the toll, the death toll is.
Uh-huh.
We know what the economic impact is. But you suggest there are ramifications long beyond when the last soldier is left.
Yes, because the, well, for example, I heard that the total cost of the Iraq and Afghanistan war so far has exceeded $1 trillion, a number that's so huge it's difficult to imagine. And unless we stop the insanity of killing, destroying, and wasting resources that could be used productively, we not be able to recover from the economic consequences of these policies.
Well, you hear senators, you hear congressmen stand up and say that we're not doing enough to defend our nation, that we need to do more, that we need to spend more, that we need to be more places. They might consider those proactive strikes or at least preparation for those. You think that's folly?
Yes, I do, because right now, for example, in I believe it's like 79 countries, we have 170 military bases. Many of those countries, the people resent our military presence, and they look at us as being trying to dominate the world militarily with fear rather than, what I would suggest is being cooperative and solving mutual problems.
Right. Frank, were you in the military?
I was in the Air Force for 4 years.
Uh-huh. Okay. Do you run into military personnel or others with different political views that just say, you know what, you're Pollyanna here. You just don't understand the realities of the world. You don't understand that there are a lot of bad guys out there, and we have to defend ourselves from them. And someone who may be ruling a country is an enemy of the United States, and we need to protect our interests.
Well, strangely enough, I don't get that reaction. In fact, I've talked to many veterans who totally agree with me that that violence is not the answer for violence. And they have discovered in being in the military that that's very true. And I think someone who I respect very much is Captain Paul K. Chappell, the author of Will War Ever End and The End of War. And he explains something that we don't hear very often, and that is the military themselves really want peace more than anyone else. They are not interested in going out and killing people.
All right. I want to mention your book briefly. You're the author of, is it The Planet Gazimbo? In Galaxy Zams?
Uh-huh.
You lost me. You have to explain that one to me in 30 seconds or less.
Oh, okay. Well, I took an imaginary trip into outer space to find a planet that was at peace, and I landed on Gazimbo.
How far did you have to travel to find one?
I don't know how many miles I went, but when I landed there, I was a bit frightened by the unusual appearance of these people, but they were very friendly. And I realized on Earth we, too, have a variety of sizes, shapes, and colors. So my fear vanished, and they took me into their home and fed me and told me the story of how they found and kept peace.
Mm-hmm.
They had peaceful lives until some of them became very greedy and the others became very needy.
Oh, that sounds familiar.
Yeah. That caused a lot of resentment, and they begin wasting time and money on arms races in anticipation of war. And just as they were on the brink of starting a war, something very unusual happened. And the Gazimbin suddenly found the peace they had lost and decided to keep it on their planet thereafter.
Someone told me if we had 50% of the greed and 50% of the need, we would have 25% of the conflict. Do you buy that?
I'm not so sure.
It's an interesting concept nonetheless, as is your book, The Planet Gazimbo in Galaxy Zams. And you can go to Peace Power Press, just the way it sounds, P-E-A-C-E, peacepowerpress.net. Check out the website. Frank, thanks so much for being with us.
Thank you very much, Jack.
All right.